702
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
The 702 app.
And on DStv channel 856.
It's 7 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday evening, the 5th of March, 2021. My name is Arabile Kumete, in for Bruce Whitfield. It is, of course, The Money Show, and it's brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, providing solutions that can turn numbers into tangible business solutions at this year's Absa Beyond the Budget Dialogue. Now, that's African Asset. Absa is a registered FSP. Now, the South African logistics industry continues to battle finding some sort of momentum. The road freight industry, one of the hardest hit. In 1 week in February, the average cross-border queue time at the Bay Bridge border post averaged almost 20 hours, costing the industry almost an estimated 450 million rand. Can they find some sort of respite? How exactly can that one be fixed? We'll chat then to the South African Association of Freight Forwarders. Also, speaking of freight, home delivery app sector heats up then. We have a new one called Quench. We get to speak to the founder of the Quench app. That's Liam McCready, who joins us today. Plus, Max Dichaba joins us from Dichaba Creations Jewelry Hub as we talk about his story and how he managed to create a business that is now, perhaps some could say, raking it in and making a 120 million rand business. That's Max Dichabo. It's also Friday, so of course we have your brutal biz quiz and the best bits of the week all coming up in today's Money Show.
702, let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
So trying to find momentum in a time when COVID-19 has certainly ravaged the country. It's been a year since the first case of COVID-19 was announced in South Africa, and many industries across the country could certainly say that they've been impacted quite heavily by the pandemic. None more so as well by than the logistics industry, which is now battling to find some sort of momentum, trying to move itself forward. Overall maritime cargo for January was down 15.15% compared to the same time last year. And there won't be any quick fixes. South African Association of Freight Forwarders Executive Member Mike Folvain joins us now. Mike, thank you so much for the time this evening. It's certainly not a quick fix that you could easily find for the industry. And as you battle to find momentum, is there hope?
Thank you very much for the question, Navangeli. There's always hope, of course. And for us, the major hope really lies in working closely with state-owned enterprises and government, because there are so many inhibiting factors in this process that we're not going to do it one side or the other on our own. We're going to have to do it together.
In trying to get sort of the way to get the industry going again, is it just based on restrictions? I mean, how much does the current restriction sort of impact your business? We're at level one of the alert level lockdowns right now. Does that continue to impact your business the same way?
Not so much. Last year, when the restrictions first started, in March last year, there were certainly big problems with the integration of cargo into the system as it then stood. So cargo was held up and delayed and so on and so forth. But those were smoothed out. So there's no real hindrance from a COVID point of view to the flow of cargo. The problems are in other areas.
One of the hardest hit sectors within logistics has obviously been road freight. As I mentioned there, the Bay Bridge border post, the average cross-border queue time there was 20 hours, costing the industry an estimated 450 million rand. Trying to save on that, of course, comes from the fact that cross-border posts have now sort of been opened up a little bit more. There's infrastructure set to be built as well at the Bay Bridge border post. But how important is trying to save on fuel costs, in a time like this?
Obviously, as fuel prices are moving up, and they are, and they will continue to do so, that's a major consideration. But it's probably not as big as the impact on the delay of cargo moving through the system. You have, for example, importers. They rely on receiving cargo within a time frame, and if it's considerably delayed, they have a real problem. They shut down factories, they have to perhaps air freight cargo in, and all of these things impact on the business that we do. As far as the borders are concerned, that 450 million rand is a weekly figure, not just one-off, and it's happening all the time. There are a multitude of reasons for that. One of them, of course, is the mismatch of regulations between the various countries, so that what we allow through may not be necessarily what the Zimbabweans allow through, just to give you one example.
Was there sufficient communication then with officials? I'm not going to just say government, because you know there could be multiple people at play here, but was there enough communication between officials who needed to know the situation and understand exactly how we could best help and suitably assist both sides of the story?
Yes, I think there's been pretty good communication. The report from which you're quoting is issued once a week. In fact, the one you have there was a week old, and this is a new one since then. So the analysis of what the problem is going out widely to everybody concerned. The bigger problem is trying to fix it. If I can give you one example, rail traffic is a problem because there are a lot of containers and cargo moving on road, which probably should be moving on rail. But the system as it stands is not really capable of handling that.
Do you think this is the right time for things to have been re-strategized, reorganized, and perhaps, you know, restructured as well to get that sort of seamless movement happening, where things that should have been on rail aren't on rail and aren't on road, should I say? Do you think that conversation has been had? Is this the right time to do it?
It is certainly a very good time to do it because it's put the whole thing in very sharp focus. And we are, as an industry, doing our best to make that happen. We have said on numerous occasions, and I think it's getting some traction now, that the concept of PPP, private-public partnership, is a very important one here. We are certainly available to do that. And in recent engagements with, for example, the DTIC, we are making some progress in that direction. So we're hoping that that will bear some fruit in the fairly near future.
Yeah, getting that fruit will be so critical in the long run. Do you think there is a turnaround this year? I mean, what's the outlook sort of look like? I know you said no quick fixes, but is this something that could be right by the end of the year, if not early next year as well?
I think by the end of the year, there's some hope, yes. I mean, that's still 9 months to go, so I think we've got a chance of doing that. The problem we have is our ports are very congested in terms of sea freight. So, for example, at Cape Town at the moment, there's an 8-day berthing delay. Now, if you're a ship owner with a worldwide global schedule to meet, you can't afford 8 days. So what happens is you pass that port and you drop the cargo off somewhere else. And that's something that's happening to us on a fairly regular basis.
Sure. So not helpful at all. Certainly hope that there is some sort of way to move things along, to get things shipped logistically and all of it comes right very soon. Mike, thank you so much for the time this evening. Appreciate it. Mike Falvane, the executive member at South African Association of Freight Forwarders.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
Now, apps have certainly been very significant and important, especially those that can deliver, whether it be food, whether it be groceries, no matter what it may be, to homes in this last year or so, as the pandemic, of course, wrecked through the rest of the world. Now, South African venture capital firm Imvelo Ventures has said that it will set aside funding in order to help back and even expand an app-based delivery service called Quench. Now, we chat to Liam McCready, who is the founder at Quench App, who joins us now. The app itself is founded by Capitech and investment firm Empowerment Capital Investment Partners, and Velo Ventures then identifying and funding promising small South African medium enterprises as well. Liam, thank you so much for the time. Let's talk just about the app itself then. What does Quench actually deliver? I mean, we've got quite a few delivery apps in South Africa, but what exactly does the Quench delivery service do?
Hi, you, Arabile. Thanks so much for having me on the show this evening. Quench in a nutshell is a multilateral online shopping service. So we've got multiple retail partners in the market that we have partnered up with and taken this app to South Africa, enabling our selected retail partners the ability to service their consumers in an on-demand fashion and all driven and all pretty much backed by a robust tech system.
There's quite a few of these, though, on the market, isn't there? I mean, you spoke about how you joined up with retailers. I mean, the likes of Woolworths, Dis-Chem, Ultra Liquor, of course, among some of the brands you partnered with. But I mean, you still have the likes of OneCart and a few others who are still based in this. So how do you get to differentiate yourself, expand yourself, grow the business so that you certainly are a step ahead?
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, there are many players in the space, and I always like to steer away from the word competitors. I think, you know, us at Quench, we're a consumer solution-centered brand. So what we're doing out there is building solutions for the consumer, right, whichever way you look at it. The players like OneCart and the other guys that are doing the same stuff in the industry, you know, fundamentally, you know, the ground-level operations of these businesses are not very far apart. So at the end of the day, it boils down to the best consumer service, right, to ensure that our consumers are getting gold standard quality service all of the time. And then I guess on the spectrum, it's about having the strength in your retail partners. So we've got to build extremely strong relationships and have strong ties with the likes of Woolworths, Dis-Chem, Ultra Liquors. And at the end of the day, you know, if we're putting our hands forward and saying to them, guys, let us take hands and move forward and let us broaden this online on-demand market and offer your consumers pure convenience. And I think as we go along and as Envelo Ventures has you know, amazingly empowered us now as Quench to really focus, you know, short-term now on escalating and offering multiple industries across the Quench app, which is really exciting. And I think where we are really positioning ourselves and differentiating ourselves in the market purely because the consumers have asked for it.
The R&D must be significant enough here, and getting the backing from the likes of Envelo Ventures is going to be very important. What is it that you're looking to try and understand a little bit more of in terms of growing your app, expanding, just making sure that it builds on from here and doesn't just become another item in the Play Store?
Yeah, absolutely. I fully agree with you, and I think that, you know, our long-term focus remains, as I said, on growing and strengthening our retail relationships with Dis-Chem and Woolworths. And, you know, that can come in many forms, Arabina. That can be from a marketing side all the way down to a ground-level kind of engagement and interaction. You know, marketing, as you and I both know, there's no such thing as a free lunch. So we've also got to put some gold into the pot to show our commitment, and we've got to really get brand awareness out there. And I think with significant investment, we're able to really position ourselves nicely on that. And then, of course, down to the ground level, you know, we've got almost 100 to 120 pickers nationwide picking out of our retail partner stores, and we've got to make life for them extremely easy. They are the link between Quench and our consumer, in essence. And we've got to invest in extremely robust pieces of technology to ensure scanning is done accurately. And all of these things really contribute to, I think, building a consumer-centered brand that finds solutions to make life easy for the consumer.
Time has always been one of the key elements for me anyway when it comes to delivery services of any kind. Knowing that, one, if I order my shopping, it will be delivered to me today, for example. How significant and how important has that been, and growth then within trying to ensure that is a continued gold standard for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the market at the moment is warming up many different prospects in terms of, let's say, online delivery, right? So you've got one whole trend that's moving towards on-demand and purely focused on I want my product now, which we fulfill and which we can do. And then, of course, there's a new trend that's starting to come through, and that's based on people are looking for bulk purchases. People are looking for specific purchases, and I think, you know, we're quite clearly spreading our wings and moving into a newly launched marketplace on Quench, whereby, you know, we're able to connect suppliers, manufacturers, wine farms, you know, the list goes on of like-minded companies like that directly to the consumer within 24 hours, between 24 hours and 48 hours. You know, this is unheard of. It's never been done in this country before. And I think, you know, those are the two trends. And as long as we can stick to the trends in the marketplace, I think we've got a really solid foundation for growth and for really projecting the business in the right way.
Liam McCready, all the best with it. Founder at Quench App, a home delivery app, is heating up the South African home delivery app sector. Very interesting. They're backed then by Envelo Ventures to set aside some funding to help back and expand the app a whole lot more. Liam McCready is the founder at Quench App.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
This week has been a market picture that has gone either which way you want it to. It certainly has gone to record highs, even for the JSE All Share, and then dropping off quite prodigiously. And today, then, more than 0.75% higher, still looking very positive. Nick Kunze is at Sanlam Private Wealth and joins us this evening to get a grip of this market picture. Boy, oh boy, what a market it has been, Nick, and especially on the back of some earnings news across many sectors.
Yeah, good evening, Arbella. Yeah, that's exactly right. Just listening to your intro, it's been a kind of a tale of almost two different markets. You know, record highs at the start and then a little bit of a pause we had during the week and a strong finish on the Friday. But as you said, certainly I think our market's set to light by the insurance companies reporting. The banks have started to report as well. And we know these financials typically lead markets up. So far, I think it's setting up for a good start.
Is this still a bull run? And I say that just because, yes, the pandemic happened, and of course we saw a fall off there, but towards, probably mid-year or so, we started seeing things pick up quite a lot. This year, yes, a few falls here and there, but we still record highs across many parts of the world. Yes, locally we've hit those. Asia has hit a few of those. The United States keeps ramping them up despite the fact that they're worried about the bond yields and such. So can we continue to just call this a bull market, should I say?
I think you can. I mean, if you drill down a little bit and look at things like the commodity sector, soft commodities especially, when you're looking at wheat or maize in South Africa or even the price of oil today. I mean, it's almost just under a dollar away from $70 a barrel for Brent. So, yes, we are in a bull market, certainly in commodities. If you look at the broader sector, maybe more closely at the tech sector, the NASDAQ in the States, that seems to actually, it's actually down as of yesterday on the year. There seems to be a little bit of a rotation out. So I don't know if we can call it like a general bull market, but I certainly think in South Africa with this commodity run, what we're doing, we're certainly going to benefit. And as you said, almost record highs every other day so far.
Yeah, that commodity bull run just looks to be adding so much pressure to so many companies to just continue number one, they're going to take advantage of it because they've been able then to re-strategize and reconfigure and restructure their businesses so much that this time around, it feels as though we can take good advantage of this commodity cycle boom, if you want to call it that. Is this the right time for companies to be looking for other opportunities? I mean, you saw the likes of AngloGold Ashanti letting go of some in South Africa, but saying there's so much more out there.
Yeah, I agree. Look, I think this time is, I think a lot of these miners, certainly from a South African point of view, in this commodity run. I mean, we had Kumba Iron Ore as well, case in point, record numbers. I mean, they've gone from, their share price was 30 Rand a few years ago. They just paid out a full-year dividend this week of 61 Rand, double what the price was. So it's a very, very different time. And I think what's happened this time is these miners and these mining houses, in the past, what they'd do is they'd go and sort of do acquisitions at the top of the cycle and they'd spend money like there's no tomorrow. I think they got their fingers burned a few years ago and they've learned. And we've seen the CapEx being cut back quite dramatically. And they haven't gone out there into these big acquisition sprees. And, of course, their balance sheets and their cash flows are exactly how they look now, absolutely rock solid. So I think from that point of view, there certainly might be a bit more legs in it. And I think they've learned. And I think it's only overall, I think it's a very positive sentiment of what's happened with the commodity boom, or the super cycle, as people are calling it.
Yeah. Just speaking about Kumba, I mean, you speak about those record numbers, and yet they're willing to cut around 653 jobs, which seems to be the minimum affected of the 1,620 odd, I think it is, that are said to be notified that they could be impacted by some sort of restructure. Is Kumba sort of restructuring again, refinding its feet, trying to align itself correctly again? I mean, you just look at the likes then of African Rainbow Minerals that also reported this week, and they have an iron ore element in their business too. And things certainly don't look too bad in that iron ore market.
No, they look unbelievable, actually. I mean, even compared to the other sort of precious metals as well. I mean, put your case in point, iron ore at the moment, today was trading at $175 a ton. That's the price that's set out of China, $175. Now, for the likes of Kumba Iron Ore, to get it out their shins and mines, stick it on a train, send it to Richard Baines, and put it on a boat and go to China, I think the all-in price is somewhere like $35, $40, all-in. And the price now today is $175. So you can just see how they are really are sort of making hay when the sun shines. It's not, we know these markets are cyclical, so it's not always going to last like it is. But the iron ore sector now, I think, is absolutely firing at the moment.
Sure. Let's talk very quickly, though, about the bond yield saga that is continuing to sort of shape the market here, there, and everywhere else. Let's explain to our viewers, to our listeners, what exactly is happening here? What is it about these bond yields that we should be so worried about or has got the market so spooked?
You know, it's fascinating. So bond yields themselves is the big market. That's kind of what's been referred to as the clever money. You know, the equity markets are pretty small in the scheme of things. The bond market's where the big money is. And they tend to be sort of the leading indicators. So what's happened with the U.S. 10-year, which everyone's talking about, and in fact, bond yields around the world, is that people are worried about inflation. Exactly what we started our conversation with commodities, with oil prices and stuff hitting new highs, that typically is inflationary. You're going to pay more for your product. So what happens when inflation rises is people, or central banks around the world, want to cool inflation, and they'll raise interest rates accordingly. So for the last better part of a decade, your cost of money has been pretty much zero. And in fact, if you're sitting in some place in Europe, you're getting negative interest rates. But that is about to change. So for the better part of a decade, you've had companies been able to borrow money for next to nothing. And that's obviously funded growth. And we've basically seen ourselves through a pandemic in the last year as well. Now that's about to change. We are seeing the cost of money rising. It doesn't sound like a great deal when you see a U.S. 10-year at, say, 1.6% was this afternoon after those jobless numbers. But bearing in mind that come from less than a year ago, they were 0.4. So your cost of money has gone up fourfold. So from that respect, it's a massive jump. And so I think it's just for long term, people are now realizing, you know, it is a good thing. We're getting back to some sense of normality. I mean, interest rates shouldn't be at zero. But it's certainly a little bit concerning that we don't want to derail this bull market, as you just spoke about now. And the cost of money is rising, so be careful.
Basically. Yeah. Worried at all about the fact that we still haven't gotten that stimulus bill out of the United States, and it's much anticipated then, of course. Plus, the rollout of vaccines across the globe seems to be going fairly well. China, earlier this week, also putting out a growth expectation, 6%. They're back to looking positive out on that front. All of those aspects could still play a part here, and we still don't know where things could go.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, you've heard the expression markets being sort of forward-looking or how much is in the price, and the markets generally at the moment are looking pretty far ahead. So we're looking, you know, we see light in the tunnel, as you said, vaccines being rolled out, you're getting a coronavirus package that's been pushed through senators or Congress as we speak. So there is things are looking up. The point being, though, look at the JSE All Share, for example. You know, up 15% already, and we're in the first week of March. So my concern is that, yes, things are good, but I think we're sort of discounting it already quite a bit in the marketplace with these current prices.
Nick, always good chatting to you. Thank you so much for the time, though, this evening. Nick Kunze is at Sanlam Private Wealth. As we unpack that market picture, it goes from interesting to even more interesting on a weekly basis by the seams of things. And that was certainly a market that has gone up, down, and everywhere else. Still a lot of earnings next week. And Massmart is certainly one of those that Bruce Whitfield will also unpack.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. Unpacking data-driven insights and analysis to turn numbers into tangible business solutions at this year's Absa Beyond the Budget Dialogue. Now that's Africanacity. Absa's a registered FSP.
The Money Show.
The Friday File.
The Friday File.
We get into the Friday File then at 18:38 then this evening. Max Di Chaba built a 120 million rand business with only a grade 10 education, having grown up in a small town just outside of Welkom. Finished school with a grade 10, no prospects most likely, probably expected to also just become a miner within the area, but decided that he won't be a miner, but will turn what is mined into a girl's best friend. Max Di Chaba, who joins us now, is the CEO at Di Chaba Creations and the Jewelry Hub as well. This is our Friday File feature. Max, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it, brother. This story really, really touches me quite a bit then. And I'd like to just talk about, perhaps to start off with, you know, the thought process, as you were going through all of these things, what perhaps drove you?
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me here.
I think what drove me more is where I come from. You know, I always look at my background. It was, you know, everyone when it was like a, you know, a stereotype. When you finish your studies, you need to work in the mine. You know, because that was the only thing that was there. Mm. You know, and I really wanted to change that. I didn't just want to be a miner. I wanted more, and I thought life it's really more than just working underground. You know, I thought, what can I do with this mine? There's so many mines here. I see mine dams, but I don't want to work in the mine, but what can I do? And then the jewelry concept came.
In all of this, you've also been able to create not just the jewelry business, but certainly others, right? You have the Chaba Creations. You have Kwadi Chaba, of course, which is sort of a hangout spot for people as well in Vilakazi Street. There's also one in Lesotho. You have the Chaba Custom Rides, the Chaba Refinery, the Chaba Foundation, the Chaba Legacy. All of these things, and yet it's just all from humble and small beginnings.
I mean, they started with just one business.
Exactly. So, you know, immediately when you realize that your situation isn't going to be the best possible, how do you, one, begin that journey to say to yourself, I won't quit. I'm going to start. I'm going to actually get something going. Let's talk about that first start. How did you get there?
All right. I think it's also believing in yourself. And, you know, as a young man, I had I used to go to church a lot, and I believed in God so much. And as a young man, I knew that anything is possible, you know. So I think growing up, I think that what really drove me even more to say, I know as a young man I can. Actually, I always tell young people now, do not ever let the situation of where you come from, the circle where you come from, determine your future in life. Then because you're coming from four-room house and you think that's where you're going to end, you can be better, you can do better, you can become something, you know. So I think I was driven by believing that, you know what, I can do anything that I want to do as long as I put my mind into it. And I started first with jewelry. I said, I want to get this one right. And, you know, I didn't believe it, but the jewelry has, you know, created another more many jobs. It has created other more businesses. You know, now I'm actually in Kimberley. I'm in mining, not because of diamond mining, not because of you know, it started with the jewelry. It's a continuous of what I've been doing, because I realized that you know, to control the market, you must control the product. And if you control the product, if you can give people what they need, I realized with exporting jewelry. You'll find that someone in Hong Kong says, listen, I need 5,000 jewelry pieces of rings, 18 karat gold with one, maybe a carat of a stone. But now, because of you do not control the raw material of that, you always have a problem of delivering. So hence, value trying to increase the scope of the jewelry manufacturing, I realized that I really need to now start going into mining industry.
Sure.
You know,
Max, it's still a difficult. It's still a difficult industry to get into, though. I mean, it's one of those closed circuit industries that one feels like you'd have to have a whole host of money to get into before you can get anything right. That yes. First start to say, I'm going to get into this jewelry industry no matter what people say and no matter what, how did that come about and how has that grown?
Very, very exciting thing. You know, what I started, I realized that the jewelry, even just buying a machine for jewelry, it's 50,000, 60,000. If you do not have 5,000, 500 in your pocket. What are you thinking? And every time when I was telling people, this is what I want, it was just too far from me, you know? And I realized I needed to start somewhere. I needed to start somewhere. And this is the problem even now. This is a problem with young people. They want certain things in life, but they don't want to start. Start with what you have. Start now. Start. What can you do? You're working. Do extra work. While you work, after that, take another 2 hours doing something, doing research about what you want. You know, so that's what, where it started. Because I knew that I wanted to create a jewelry factory, but I realized that I don't have the money. So this is what I've done. I realized I need to think of something close to me that I can start with. And I thought beads. So I started with beads, but the goal was the jewelry company. And I remember when we started, we're doing beads, but because I have a jewelry background in them, they were different. You know, I started doing for choirs. I started doing for people when you go into, certain things, you know, fashion show, they'll come call Max. He will sort you out. Choirs, when they go to competitions, you know, they will call me. I'll start hooking them up. And, you know, that's where it started. And sure. I remember I went to this competition where I was competing with people who have very good ideas, but they were just ideas. You know, I had a business, even though it was giving me 500 rand, and I remember it was SAB Kickstart program. So they were looking for young, I think they still have that. It's such an amazing thing that SAB Brewery has done. I'm one of the beneficiaries there. So they've actually called 20 people and they give them training. At the end of the day, They try to find out who has a business, who has a brilliant idea. But you know what? I was competing with people who had an amazing ideas, but it was just ideas. I had a business. Even though I had 2 staff members, I had business. And that's what helped me to really kickstart my business and start buying machinery after winning that.
Yeah.
And from start buying machinery, I went to knock every door to say, guys, this is me, because it doesn't end there. You have equipment, you have, but now you need to produce. Where do you sell?
Max, it wasn't all a happy and a happy ending, though, right? I mean, there was some difficulty. There were some failures as well along the way for you.
A lot. There were a lot of failures. And I think part of the journey of becoming a best entrepreneur and the best, it's going through those things and conquering that. How do you know? I always tell people, I don't need anyone to tell me. I'm really, really successful businessman. How do I value that? It's things that I've gone through. You know, I know where I come from. I come from a garage where we called it the house. And I was hearing guys in location saying, you know what, I'm struggling. I'm from a 4-room house. I'm saying, what are you talking about? I'm from a garage. That was a garage where you put a car. That was my home. That's where I grew up.
Yeah.
And you were telling me 4-room house. What are you talking about? But I could still make it. I could still did not let the garage mentality that I, you know, my parents were staying in the garage, like 5 siblings plus 7 people in 1 garage. That's what I used to do.
Yeah.
But still there,
sure.
I knew that I can step out from the ordinary. I can step out from there. And to be honest, only thing I had that time was just believing and believing and believing.
Yeah. Very quickly then. Lessons and biggest inspirations.
Yes, sir.
What are those? Your biggest lessons thus far and your inspirations at this time. What are those, very quickly?
I think biggest lessons is, you know, you need to always budget. You need to always understand, even though you have a business, but you need to also try and calculate your risk very much. I mean, I get certain businesses that I've done even, you know, a couple of years back now, because I didn't calculate 1, 2, and 3. I end up making a bad decision on certain things like that. So I think let's do calculated risk. And stuff like that. And again, I can say to young people, let's stand up, let's work. If you believe it, you can have it. If you believe it, you can really have it. We start sure. believing in ourselves.
Yeah.
We start believing in what we can do as especially young people, you know, because that's where the morale has gone. You've just finished matric. You've just, you know, you're out of work, and you think that's what your life is. It's waste. You know, you can do more than that. You can do something. But start believing in yourself.
Yeah. Start believing in yourself. Our Friday File feature today is with Max Dichaba, the CEO at Dichaba Creations, talking about his jewelry hub, just the start of that business. Thank you so much for the time, Max. We really, really appreciate it here on The Money Show. That was our Friday File.
702. Let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
It is Friday, of course, so we do get into our brutal biz quiz then to end off the first hour of the show. Our brutal biz quiz starts off, and hopefully you can call us then, 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. We'll get straight into it then. The German prosecutors charged which former CEO of a JSE-listed company with balance sheet fraud? German prosecutors charging which former CEO of a JSE-listed company with balance sheet fraud? That's the first question then of the brutal biz quiz. Let's answer that right after this.
702. Let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
It's the brutal biz quiz on this Friday evening. 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. Let's get straight into it then. Dino from Mondio calling on the line. German prosecutors charging which former CEO of a JSE-listed company with balance sheet fraud? Dino, do you have the correct answer for us?
I think so, Mark Huster. 100%
correct. The ex-Steinhoff CEO, of course, carrying charges with a maximum sentence of a 3-year prison term if convicted. It would be the first time since the scandal broke that anyone from Steinhoff is indeed brought to book. All right, Dino, let's get into the second question then. Which former French president, the president of France, which former French president was handed a 3-year jail term, jail sentence this week? Ah, there we go. Look at that. Didn't even have to finish the question there. Of course, he was getting that 3 years in prison for corruption and influence peddling, but suspended 2 years of the sentence. All right. Question three then, Dino. Let's get on a roll here. FSR is the JSE share trading code of which company? FSR. They had their results coming out as well then today. And of course, it was the first time that they had completely split from RMB. Who could I be talking about?
I'm gonna have to pass.
Unfortunately, dear. All right, then. FSR is the JSE share trading code of which company? John in Dipsloot, do you perhaps know who or what FSR stands for and which company that is on the JSE? The CEO is Alan Pullinger, if that gives you any sort of a hint there as well.
No, I would have to pass that.
No, that's unfortunate. All right. Who is FSR? It's the JSE share trading code of a particular company, having brought out a set of earnings. Lynn, hopefully, will have an answer for us. Just very interesting, of course, with their set of earnings. Not so long ago, we have gotten even word out of FNB. They managed to pick things up quite a bit as well. Recently, to get a sense of where the market is sort of looking. Of course, these companies have actually suffered a lot of late and have had to do quite a lot. Zandi in Four Ways, FSR, the share trading code of which company?
First Rand.
There we go. It is indeed. It's the first of the big banks to report their 2020 earnings. The bank CEO, Alan Pullinger, talked to us through the company results then yesterday and told us about how the recovery in the bank is a little bit better. All right, let's talk very quickly then about Val Nickus, who is the chief executive of which listed quick service restaurant company? Val Nickus. Do you know, Zandi? Sorry, say that again.
It is
Spur Corporation. 100% correct on that one. We'll quickly go into question number five then for you, Zandi. We're getting to the end here. It's the second last question, so you have to go all the way for us, right? So you can be the brutal biz winner this evening. Which country blocked the supply of coronavirus vaccines to Australia? That happened this week. So which country was it that blocked the supply of coronavirus vaccines to Australia?
I heard it in the week, but it's just completely
the Leaning Tower of Pisa. is in this country?
Italy.
There we go. Yeah, that's the one. The European Union has made its first intervention into the supply of coronavirus vaccines, with Italy blocking a shipment of the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine to Australia. In January, the European Union actually placed temporary controls on the export of vaccines made inside the bloc, following a spat with AstraZeneca and wider supply issues. All right, it's the last question. All right, Zandi, you're the only person who can answer this one, and we're leaving it to you, okay? This is it. Johnson & Johnson will be helped by which pharmaceutical giant to produce its single-shot vaccine? So who is going to be helping Johnson & Johnson make their vaccines?
Is it Aspen?
It's not Aspen, no.
AstraZeneca.
No, not even that, unfortunately. No, that's not the answer. Ah, so unfortunate. Sorry there, Zandi, unable to get that one. So it is the last question. Whoever wins this one, of course, becomes the Brutal Biz Quiz winner for this Friday evening. Johnson & Johnson will be helped by which pharmaceutical giant to produce its single-shot vaccine? Tulani in Pretoria, do you know the answer to this one?
No,
okay, not good on that one. How about you, William in Cape Town? Do you have an answer for us on this one?
It's Merck.
There we go. And we have a Brutal Biz Quiz winner this Friday. Pharmaceutical giant Merck will help make Johnson & Johnson's single-shot coronavirus vaccine. It's an unusual pact between fierce rivals that is among several steps intended to boost supply, particularly out in the United States. William there out in Cape Town is our Brutal Biz Quiz winner this Friday evening. All right, that's where we, of course, are going to close off the show. A whole host of things still happening, even next week, particularly speaking. Just a lot then about company results, which have come out this week. Even the banking stocks starting to come out. The likes of RMB, First Rand making themselves known as well in this market. FNB saying to themselves they've got a market picture that they can speak of. Unfortunately, sad news though, Kumba Iron Ore putting out an update saying that Solidarity saying that Kumba Iron Ore could be releasing 1,620 potential jobs, which does put things in a little bit of context and how difficult the environment has been despite everything that has gone on. Still many questions, though, around the stimulus bill out of the United States. And what does that actually mean locally? Of course, earlier this week, we even saw the public service workers suggesting that they would like CPI plus 4%. It's the start of a big wage debate in the country in a situation that the finance minister has spoken about and said, we need to curb the curve that has been going in an upward trajectory all this time. Will it be solved? Well, we'll soon find out. We're going to have your best bits then, of course, of the market in this week that was really all the interviews that Bruce has done as well across the week and just how significant things have been and what changes have really happened across the spectrum.